Discussions with Ajahn Suchin in Bangkok and Gangwajam, August 2013. Recorded and edited by Jonathan and Sarah. Speakers include Kevin, Tadao, Sarah, Suchin, Betty, Jonathan, and other friends.
So Kevin, what have you found most helpful in the discussions since you have been back here?
Oh, in general, I found it very helpful because, like I was saying earlier, I kind of got into some different views and beliefs when I went home to America, and I wasn't reading so much and listening to Dhamma, but that changed after I came back, which is good. So it was insightful for me because it just shows, you know, for like a couple of years I got into these other kind of ideas about things which were just thinking. And when I was able to recognize that it was just thinking, it was just these beliefs that I started to cling to just based on thinking. It wasn't the realities at the moment. It just shows for so long that went on. It's just anatta. It's not a person. And then by conditions, there were the right conditions. There was understanding for a moment that was just thinking. So my view changed. So it just shows that it's uncontrollable. You don't know the next day how you're going to think or what's going to arise really, and how you're going to view things. So, but also I've been reading Ajahn's book Survey Paramattha Dhammas again, and that's been very helpful too. Obviously studying more, but then also with the Ajahn was talking about kusala and akusala citta, and how, you know, akusala citta is similar to an enemy and kusala citta is similar to a friend. And in the past I used to, you know, say I was upset, angry, or whatever, I would think, well, it's just by conditions, it's just the way it is, which is true. But I think I've learned a little bit more to understand, well, what kind of citta is there? Okay, it's akusala. Well, why? What's the point of having akusala citta? Because it's just clinging. There's no understanding. So I think I glimpsed a little bit of insight into that gradually. You can let go of the akusala just with understanding gradually. So I think that was helpful for me, especially so far.
And Tadao, what have you found most helpful since you've been here?
Mean that while I was in Japan?
Since you've been
here?
The discussions.
This time, not so much as the last time. Last time it was phenomenal. It somehow changed my behavior, daily life behavior. I learned that I shouldn't be like part-time practitioner. Yeah, if you want to practice Dhamma, it has to be full-time, devoted. Of course, it's not doing something here, but to be more sincere and dedicate oneself to Dhamma. And if you live in a non-Buddhist country, we think that we can do anything we like, and then sometimes think and listen to our just hour or so. That is a sort of part-time mentality, and I thought that it's not really good. It doesn't help myself. Yeah, it was.
If I might make a comment about because I get from my family all the time this question of if there has been some understanding arising, according to my family, there would have to be an accompanying change in one's behavior. And I've told them that that's not necessarily the case, for that. There might not always be some change in somebody's behavior, but there is some change in, if there's some change in understanding, that there could be a very gradual, everything is so gradual that, and it's very difficult for them to understand this. Everything depends on conditions. And it reminded me of that, what your comments just a minute ago, reminded me of that. Everything is conditions. And the same thing with Kevin's comments. It all boils down to a more of an understanding of the way conditions operate and how everything arises, everything that's real, that's a Dhamma, arises because of conditions. And that there's no we that can control it. And the more we understand that, the more there is this letting go of attachment to these ideas and things that we have. And I find this for me has been the most helpful.
Okay, my comment on what you said. I think there are at least two things which differentiate from right practitioners and wrong practitioners. Right. There are two factors, or at least two elements, which differentiate, okay, right practitioners from wrong practitioners. One is that right practitioners do not have the idea that one has to do something, okay? The second one is that right practitioners do not expect any results.
Right.
Yeah.
Sarah was just saying that.
Well, I was interested in your comment about change of behavior and full-time practitioner rather than part-time practitioner. Could you elaborate a little bit more about that? Thanks.
I think it's a degree of sincerity. Yeah. Now you live in Australia, so you can see that how it is. If you do not have any conversation with the Dhamma friends, yeah, you can see how it is to have opportunity to develop kusala, yeah, or to be reminded, yeah, of realities. Yeah, so we are somehow being swayed by the sort of sensuous sort of experiments. There are many favorable things or desirable things in developed countries, yeah, like nice food, etc. Yeah. So we easily forget how important it is, even how important it is to have even short, not short, but even low level sati. But then somehow we tend to forget the sort of importance of the satipatthana. Yeah. And one thing I do not expect, really I do not expect anything from my developing satipatthana. I know that it's a wrong understanding, and if I attain some kind of realization in sort of somewhere or sometime in this both of in this round of birth and death, yeah, that's fine. So I do not much expectation from whatever I do, but at least like since last time I read more sort of Pali text, and somehow it's not trying, but I love to. I think that I feel that it's wholesome to memorize Buddha's words. So while I'm walking, I just recite and try to memorize. Learn these verses by heart, and I do not expect anything. I do not expect that by doing this, I love more sati, I love more kusala. I do not have that expectation. But I think that at least this is better than just walking without guarding my senses, you know. Because last time Ajahn Sin said that, like samvara, guarding our senses, it's not only for monks, but for lay followers too. And I didn't know that. Guarding means guarding senses. Because I had some idea that it's only for monks. So when monks walk, he has to sort of pay attention to sort of desirable object. I thought that applied only to monks, but the Ajahn Sis said, no, it applies to lay followers too. That was a realization.
Well, I'm sure it does apply to everyone, but I'm not so sure that... I remember on the discussion list, you made the comment after your return from the last visit that you were behaving more like a monk than before. And I just wondered whether that was really necessarily more understanding or whether it was perhaps an idea that there should be more monk-like behavior or what.
It's a very simple understanding that having less clinging is better than having more clinging to various objects.
But what you're saying is that by in your daily life, by guarding the senses, you're having less clinging to what is happening around you?
No, I'm not saying I'm having less clinging. I'm paying less attention to desirable objects. So I do not miss, now I somehow do not miss if I miss sort of experiencing or seeing or hearing desirable objects. It's sort of a kind of understanding. That's it. I do not expect anything from changing my behavior.
But you know, you never know that there could be conditions for particular jittas to arise that would cause say more kusala behavior to arise. But you never know when the jittas arise for more akusala behaviors are going to come up. You never know when that's going to happen because there are conditions for it.
I'd like to ask Ajahn Suchin a question about it. So Tadao says that after his last discussions about samvara and guarding of the senses, he appreciates more that it is for lay people anytime, even this moment, but from that he feels that if one he's walking, he's memorizing or reciting texts in Pali, then that will be a condition for there to be more guarding, less clinging to sense objects than just walking along thinking about other objects. Is that right?
No, your expression is not correct. I'm doing these things because I'd like to do. That's okay. It. Yeah.
Okay. So let's put it this way. So he, after his last discussions, he's more interested in the Dharma. So when he's walking, rather than just thinking about usual things as before, he's more inclined to think about Pali texts and recite and appreciate that. This is a condition for more samvara.
Yes, but what is now? This is the most important.
It's like the bricklayer, like Ajahn said in, I'm not sure if it's from the commentaries or Ajahn, but it's in her book, of it. Whenever there's kusala and we're really on the path, it's like we're moving bricks from a wall. But whenever there isn't, it's like adding bricks. It's like building up samsara, and it's so subtle. Dhamma has to be the most subtle thing, because if it wasn't, it would be penetrated by people easily and frequently. So it's the most subtle thing. So sometimes, you know, maybe there is understanding, maybe there isn't, but it's just very subtle. So sometimes we think we can memorize or something like this, and it's not for understanding, but still, there's the opportunity there to understand the lopa that just wants to memorize or just likes to know that you know, have that text or so forth. So that's the opportunity I think. That's just the way I see it.
I think it's a kind of a low-level sila, just having a sort of some kind of foundation, which may or may not condition arising sati. But if it doesn't condition, that's fine. If it does, that's fine too.
Well, I think the comment about the bricks is useful because as soon as it's an idea, anything other than just understanding at this moment is actually building bricks. So as soon as it's an idea of, well, maybe it'll help if I open the book, or maybe next moment I'll hear something useful, but it's forgetting about hardness now, seeing now. So it's always taking away from what is now. So if at the moment we're walking along and we're not reciting a text, but this seeing, this hearing, this hardness. So actually, samvara or guarding and development of sila actually depends on understanding at this moment. So it always comes back to that.
What about being able to think about what is there in Tipitaka and what is there now? Otherwise, no way to really understand what appears now.
Last time you said that, like Abhidhammaya, it explains all the realities. Yeah? But you said that even Sutta, each passage, each word of Sutta is related with Satipatthana. Mm-hmm. So if one has that kind of understanding, even if appears to be very vague verse, yeah, still it's really profound. So I love to, I myself like to sort of contemplate it on the meaning of, sort of real meaning of a word or phrase in terms of realities. So it's what I like to do. Well, I'm not just repeating
some
passages.
Please.
Yeah.
Please say something about reflecting that you have reflected before.
Yeah, so,
like what?
Even like very simple, like okay, the beginning of Dhammapada. Mano puppan gama dhamma, mano setta mano maya. Even such a very simple passage,
yes.
I have to think, what is mana? And why he said that mana is the sort of the most important leader or every reality is made of dhamma. Why does he say that realities are made of dhammas? And I just contemplate.
Can Panya apply it right now?
No, my friend. Like this, very long. I get my father cannot do anything.
Yeah. When one says anything about citta, say it's here and now, and it can bring more about the understanding of it. Yeah. Is reciting like chanting?
No, it's not chanting. It's sort of trying to learning these passages by heart. And I know what you're going to say, because in one of your talks, one Upasika is saying to you that whenever she walks, she does is reciting "Iti Piso Bhagava Arahang," blah blah blah. And you said, and this lay fellow asked you, what do you chant? And you said, no, I do not chant. All I chant is Namo Tassa Bhagavata. That's all I do. You say so. That was an interesting passage.
So reciting is chanting, right?
So maybe it's not really important.
But if there can be moment of understanding, the moment of thinking or saying out that phrase is better. And it can be that level when right understanding develops.
Because I think it goes back to the the point that Kevin mentioned earlier about he was saying when he was following some other tradition, some Mahayana tradition, and he realized actually it's just thinking and thinking, and actually understanding can never develop just by thinking and thinking more and more about different concepts if there's no understanding of the reality. So the same thing, if we read a text and it's just thinking and thinking about the meaning, but actually no understanding of thinking as a reality right then and there, or right now, because now there is thinking, now there is seeing. So whether we are reciting or whether we're thinking about the beautiful sunset, it's still, when it comes down to the reality, is still just thinking. And what is actually going to be most precious is the direct understanding of thinking at that moment, or seeing, or whatever reality it is.
It's so true, because you can see it's so easy, whether it's reciting texts or reading or learning Pali or anything. We just make a story about it if there's no understanding. So the key is really the development of understanding. But it's subtle, because it's naturally, we generally have accumulations to not be mindful. So it doesn't arise, doesn't naturally happen. So that's the problem that people have, even within, you know, Buddhism. Not understanding. It's the accumulation. There has to be accumulation. There has to be the right conditions, hearing and understanding. So that's why we always remind ourselves.
Would you like to just think over what you chant or recite instead of just reciting? Like Mano, I don't know, the Pali, Mano what? Bupang Kamarasang, instead of saying so. Now, is it that which is the chief of experiencing? Yeah. Instead of just Mano Bupang Kamarasang.
What about paying less attention to the distractions in the world around us?
By yourself or what?
Well, I think what Dao was saying was that he was just found that he was less interested.
What about understanding thinking as just a moment which experiences such word or thought?
I think it's very easy to slip into the idea that there should be more of that kind of restraint, which, and the moment that happens, then it's probably a wrong view of a kind.
Someone was saying on the internet they were saying that at work, someone keeps asking them for favors to cover their shift at work, and they kept doing it, but this other person never offers to do anything for them, and they started to feel like this person was just taking advantage of them because they were too nice. So this person was being mean and taking advantage, and so they asked the question. They said, "What should I do? Is it better to, you know, am I being taken advantage of? What should I do? Should I say no?" And that kind of thing. And then someone actually responded and said, it's better to err on the side of being taken advantage of, because at least you're still doing the good deed. And I said, there's no understanding at that time. We have to have sati, because the Buddha implored us to have sati. So if we do something with a kusala motivation, then because either we have conceit or we have aversion, we feel that we must do it because it's part of the path. That's not the path. That's just laying more bricks, like you were saying. That's just building it up. So that's how subtle it really is. And I think that relates to our situation with being more distracted, being less distracted. It's very easy to actually have a kusala and we don't know it. We mistake it for doing something good. We mistake it for doing something that's going to help us attain nirvana or something, but that's just thinking in itself.
And the point is it's all self. It's me who's helping or me who's not helping or me who's restraining or me who's not restraining.
Yeah.
Or the good practitioner or the wrong practitioner or yeah. It's all what am I doing
exactly.
And having, how can I have more kusala for me? And as Tadao said, it's not about doing.
Right, exactly.
But I think it's a big issue as far as sort of practitioner or Buddhism is concerned, because probably in Mahayana, I don't know ultimate goal or not, but their goal is becoming a nice person, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And in Theravada, it shouldn't be the ultimate goal, yeah? Ultimate goal is elimination of our departments, yeah? So in a sense, we need to be a nice person, yeah? But as a foundation, Buddha said that we should somehow abstain from wrongdoing and develop all the qualities and purify our minds, So it means that we have a very sort of, in a sense, nice person too, But no. My question is, do we really have to be a nice person or not? Is it a sort of building block or block for attaining a nibbana or not? It's what I'd like to know.
It's not a question of a person being nice. It's a question of whether there are conditions for the Dhamma for that would bring upon metta or karuna or any of those would arise. That's the question. It's not a question of a person being nice. It's a question of whether those there are conditions for those Dhammas to arise. The four Pramihans. Anyway. But that's basically what it is. It's not, because if we continue to think and say, I'm going to be enough from now on, I'm going to be a nice person. I'm not going to do this. It doesn't work. It really does, because I used to do that. I know. It just doesn't
that's
work.
That's just more samsara. We may think it's something good. It's just, you'd be a nice person with understanding.
Is the key
to understanding.
This is one of my burning questions. I'm not a nice person. I'm a very selfish person. I know that one. And when people are somehow know that I'm practicing Dhamma, Buddhism, they think that I should be a nice person.
As we know, the result of the kusala, that is jhana, the vipaka of that is rebirth in one of the Rupa Brahma or Arupa Brahma planes. So that's more life in samsara, more bricks in the wall.
But in Buddhism you said that dana, sila, bhavana, So there are two types of bhavana, and satipatthana is the ultimate sort of practice for developing, attaining nibbana. But samatha and sila and giving, these are important factors,
Kusala.
Kusala.
Kusala to be developed.
So, performing a kusala doesn't lead to anything, but still doing performing kusalas from time to time or as many opportunities as possible is a favorable conditions for sati to arise or not.
It's not creating conditions for sati to arise, but we are told they are supporting conditions for the development of understanding. But there has to be that accumulation, the development of understanding is what has to be developed there.
But when is there kusala and when is there akusala? That's difficult to understand when there really is. It's very easy to mistake akusala for kusala, in my experience, and what I've seen with a lot of people. Very, 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 very easy. Because our ignorance is strong. Our accumulated ignorance is strong. So we don't know. You know, if we knew, we wouldn't need a Buddha to come and teach us. We would just figure it out for ourselves and follow the path. But our ignorance is very strong. So it's hard to know when there's kusala and when there's akusala if we don't know and mistake it.
Understanding, and like even now, if one shows some kindness to someone, if there's metta or there's abstaining from harming, again, it's not self that shows kindness or abstains from harm, it's just conditioned realities. So it's still not a matter of doing something, it's still a matter of understanding what is conditioned at that moment.
So the point is to be good or to understand reality.
Of course, to understand.
Not just by thinking. Each word should be considered carefully, like now. When we talk about citta, the chief of that which experiences an object right now. Now, see, there is it, that which sees or that which hears. In order to really understand reality, it does mean that you just think about it is the manopupangkhamarasang, but it is this moment which actually sees that which appears. Otherwise, it's postponed all the time by thinking.
I was actually very surprised by a lot of the stories I saw in some of the people in the suttas. That attained sotapanna or higher, and some of the things that they had done, it's mentions in the suttas previously. Like, so bad with names, I wish I knew the names, but there was one follower of the Buddha whose son was always mischievous and getting in trouble, and he wanted his son to go see the Buddha, so he kind of bribed him into it. Said, I'll give you money if you just go listen to the Buddha talk and take the 8 precepts or something. And the son pretended to do it, and then he said to give him money. He went back again. Anyway, he didn't appear to have any interest. He was always being mischievous, always getting in trouble. And then he became a sotapanna, listening to the Buddha. Another person who stole money. They worked for the king, and they stole money for the funeral flowers. And then they went, I'm not sure if it was later that day, but I think it might have been later that day, or very close, proximate to when they stole. They became a sotapanna, or things like that. That's no way condoning something, you know, doing bad deeds, but it shows the point is the development of understanding is what's important to, you know, attain nibbana and root out the defilements permanently. And then kusala naturally, by accumulate, you know, by conditions, kusala accumulates. So we're conditioned to do wholesome deeds or unwholesome deeds, whatever arises at any moment. So we shouldn't think it's an individual that should do these, keep these deeds up. That's just a kusala. We should understand there's not an individual. So what is there to, why cling? And why do bad deeds? Why have a kusala?
John, would you say a little more about postponing all the time by thinking, because I think that it can be a trap. We think, well, we're thinking about Dharma, so okay, that's kusala, but actually it can still be like an excuse of postponing because it's not.
Because who's thinking again, see? When akusala arises, then for those who have developed right understanding enough, it's different from people who do not have developed right understanding at all. So they try very hard not to have akusala. But for those who have enough understanding to understand akusala at that moment as just a reality, it's different. Different level of understanding.
And they don't mind about the akusala at all because they understand it's conditioned already at that moment.
Otherwise, how can there be the understanding of akusala when akusala does not arise at all? So it depends on development of understanding. So I would like to understand too what you mean about practitioner. Again, even right one, what does it mean? Practitioner.
Oh, practitioner. Practitioner means that those who know that there are no practitioners.
I like that. I'm going to write that.
Okay, it's related with what you said, Ajahn. Last Saturday in the afternoon, you were talking about sort of practicing, and then the main topic was harness, yeah? And then people saying that, we have to be, there should be awareness when there is a harness, yeah?
By condition.
Yeah, by condition.
Yeah.
And then, as far as I understood, you said that don't insert any notion of self after that experiencing hardness as hardness. Is it not?
Not don't. By conditions again. Everything by conditions.
Everything is by conditions.
Right.
So
right.
If we have a feeling that, or some kind of satellite, some notion that, now I'm aware of hardness, it's not real sati.
But there can be sati followed by such thinking.
And if there's an idea of wanting to guard the senses in order not to have akusala, then usually it's just clinging to oneself, not having akusala again. So, as Kevin said, it's subtle because the self comes in very quickly.
I remember when I wanted to be a monk, I was a short temporary ordination. But before that, when I was thinking about it, and I was back in America before I came to Thailand, and I was reading the Visuddhimagga, but I didn't have any understanding. So I was reading about guarding the senses, and I was thinking about when I'm going to be a monk in the future. And I was thinking about I always keep my eyes downcast so there's less contact with objects. It's akusala. So at that moment, there was aversion to those objects. So at that moment, I was just accumulating more tendency of the same thing. Tendency of that akusala, because there wasn't any understanding.
I don't think that what he said is accurate, because it's a monk's way of working outside his monastery. He's not supposed to look around like this.
He's talking about his own experience.
Okay.
Yeah, in my own experience, I was thinking about trying to always keep my eyes certain type of gaze. But that's just, it was because of akusala. If it's done with panya, there it can be wholesome. If a monk knows there's no point looking at, you know, staring at this object here or there or becoming entranced by these objects because there's understanding, then that's good. Then, because it's done with understanding, it's kusala. But if you just do it because, oh, I shouldn't look there because I'm going to be attached, then that's not understanding. That's not part of the path. That's misunderstanding.
You forced yourself.
Forced, yeah, exactly. Akusala, exactly. That's not a detachment. That I wasn't detached at that time. I was thinking I want to be detached, and that's not real detachment. You know, if you're really detached, why do you have to force yourself to look away? It's not detachment. So, then we have to understand when it's kusala or akusala.
I mean, the idea it can be motivated by attachment too. The idea, I mean, based on mistaking akusala for kusala, that the idea of restraining to looking down, that can be an object of attachment.
Oh, I'm sure there was a lot of attachment too when I was thinking that way. Sure, absolutely. That's why it's easy for people to misinterpret the path. Because we don't know what's kusala and what's akusala until we hear and consider.
And the absolute truth is no self. See, anything which we are thinking about, if there is no understanding about it as a reality, then it has to be self. The only way is to develop understanding until no matter akusala arises or kusala arises, the panya can understand, not try to stop it, but to understand it as it is. I think that all of you have read about the asava and oka and yoka. Please explain asava, oka and yoka so that everyone can see that how difficult to get away from kilesa or attachment to the idea of self. It's not as easy at all. Like try to be good, try to guard the senses, but it's what? Oka or yoka. See, that's why Buddha pointed out about these three, asava and oka and yoka. So please tell us more about.
Maybe you, John.
I would like to hear your opinion.
I'll start a little bit. The asavas are like the more subtle fermenting defilements. So as soon as there is seeing, the asavas arrive, such as kamasava, the clinging to sensuous object. And it's so subtle that we don't realize it's there. Like, as soon as there's looking at the wall, there's clinging, very subtle clinging, or clinging to becoming, for example. So these are the defilements that arise, but are so subtle we have no idea about them.
Would you say it before thinking?
Before thinking, and even in the sense store process. So as soon as there's seeing, there's clinging there immediately. So whether you look up at the sunrise or look down to avoid looking at it, or whether you think of the Pali text or whatever, as soon as there's seeing, there's going to be clinging to the sense object instantly, because clinging arises from the moment we wake up all throughout the day. But this is not the clinging that there will be awareness of, because it's too subtle for that. And the ogres are the floods of defilements, which are more gross. But I think you know more about them.
Can we say that each moment of akusala is oka? Like we asked whether should we do this or that, see? Without the idea of self as yoka, it's not there. But when it's, how you say that, what is the meaning of yoga?
Yoga.
Please.
It's the yokes. Mm-hmm. The yokes, things that are your, attach you to something. But I'm not quite sure what a difference between a hookah and a yoga is. I'm not quite sure what the difference is.
Okay. Whenever akusala arises, is it helpful? Helpful. See? So the ocean's wider and wider and wider all the time when akusala arises.
So it's the flood that gets
bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
Oh, so ogre is the flood. The flood.
So then it becomes a yoke because it gets bigger and bigger. I think the word yoke is used
because it like it's what holds one in samsara. The,
So,
any, just various levels of deeper and deeper.
The realities which are aswa, oka, and yoka are the same, right? But they have different function, and we can understand the function of each one as aswa. When it seeps out, because it's so much in the citta all the time. As soon as the seeing consciousness has fallen away, and is followed by sampatichana, sandirna, and votapana, that which is inside cannot stay silent anymore. It seeps instantly. So how can one understand that when there is no right understanding, we are bound to have all this kind of akusala, different aspects, like asava, one can see it. No one can stop at all. Only when panya arises and develop little by little, and it depends on how much one can understand the characteristic of reality as not self at all. See, while one is chanting, is there any understanding of that moment as not self? See? So there must be asava, and at moment when there are many, many moments of akusala, the ocean is broader and broader, wider and wider, more difficult to go across. And yoga, this one, like, shall I do be good? Just thinking about that, shall I be good? See, you cannot escape from the circle of all this yoga. So shall I be good? Depending on understanding, because you see that akusala cannot bring about the end of circle of birth and death at all. Right? Akusala. So one can see that only reality which can save one from the circle of birth and death must be only panya. So panya can arise when there are conditions for its arising. But just chanting with our understanding is not conditioned for panya, because it's like remembering, thinking about anything, but you don't think about other thing but the Pali terms. So it depends on understanding at that moment. So when there is the understanding of that which appears, it's much better, because it is the path leading to the end of circle of birth and death.
Anytime, right, Ajahn? Anytime.
The more you understand akusala, it's so helpful that you will not be underestimate or careless to consider the teachings very, very carefully.
What is
your name
again? Ray.
Ray.
And Betty, what's the name of your friend?
Paul.
By the way, both of you are
lawyers. I've been reading. I'm just learning. My apologies. I'm just learning. My apologies. But one of the things that I'm now reading is about karma. And it's, as I understand it, it's even more harsh than I thought it would be before I started my study. And that is, if it appears to be, at least logically, that if you have complete understanding, and if you're a wonderful person, and you happen to be hit by a previous someone in your lifespan who brought a lot of danger and horrible things into the world, how do you cope with that? How can you handle the impact of karma, period?
Through understanding it.
But does it change it?
It doesn't change it. It won't change the story around which the karma, okay,
yes,
arose, all right?
Yes.
It cannot change the story. It's one of the karma is or in this case, to be exact, vipaka, the results, is already been conditioned. It will arise, and there's no you to change it or anything. So the more understanding of that, and this would lead to an acceptance that that is what happened, and that's it.
And then, of course, I guess the way out is to get enlightenment. That seems to be the only way out, right?
Well, again, it's not a question of getting.
It's about through understanding and studying,
yeah,
and doing all of the things that are necessary, which are almost impossible. Isn't that true? I mean,
well,
you can be under the impact of karma and be trapped for your whole life.
You know, well, all we experience karma all the time. So when we think of a situation, like for example, something bad happens in our life, get into like car accident, something bad happens, and we think karma that way. But all the objects that we experience are because of karma. So it's just another occurrence of that. It just happened to be particularly severe. So when there's more understanding, I think we can be detached. We still suffer. And that's the point, actually. That's why we should have detachment, because of there's suffering and there's not understanding. So like an arhant can still be attacked, killed, but because of the defilements are eradicated, it's a different situation than if we were attacked. We would have aversion. We would have a kusala. The arhant has understanding. That it's not really a person at all that it happens to.
I think we learn, Paul, that we learn through our Buddhist studies that life is actually very fair. So we think that it's so unfair. You know, my friend was hurt in a car accident, and how could that other driver have driven like that? But actually, those moments of being hit on the head, experiencing hardness, or even when death comes, when we appreciate this is the result of karma, it's not anyone else's fault, it's not the problem in society or the world at large, and it encourages us to realize that actually this moment is very precious. Now there is an opportunity to develop understanding, there is an opportunity to do good, and this will bring its own good results in future. So I think it does help one to have more equanimity or more acceptance that whatever happens now, it is by conditions. It's not because of some terrible deeds of someone else. So it actually helps one to have more friendliness or more compassion for others as well, instead of blame. Because one appreciates that what happens to one is result of past deeds, but the reaction in response to that result, the anger or the attachment which leads to more deeds in future, this is nothing to do with karma. This is one's tendency or habit, and this is what leads to more karma in future. So in Buddhism, they talk about three rounds, the round of result, the round of wholesome and unwholesome responses or reactions, and karma, so the new karma, which will bring more results in future. And most of the time, or all the time, we're actually trapped in these rounds, round and round and round. But through understanding what the cause of karma is, what the cause of all the trouble is, this is the way that there can eventually be an end to these cycles.
And what would you like to change?
Well, I think your explanation was the only one that makes sense to me at the moment. I don't think it's possible to change.
So, do not think about changing.
I think that what you can do is to do the best you can with the thought of for the future. And that is what is your activity during your lifetime going? How is it going to impact on those who follow you after you're dead? As far as the impact of karma, depending upon how harsh it is, I don't see how you can really change that.
No one can deal with it,
but you can't change
Nothing can be done about what's going on.
That's a rather dramatic thing.
When you talk about karma, do you also think about the result or just karma?
Well, I don't know whether I'm going to give the right answer to that because I haven't learned enough yet. But to me, karma is the impact on your life now of those who passed on years, many, many, many years before you were even born.
Can we say that karma is the cause which will bring result?
No, I think as I understand karma, it depends upon whether you're lucky or not. If you are the most wonderful person in the world, but you had a murderous ancestor who is hitting you hard with karma, How can you do that? You have to live with the karma, as far as I can understand.
Can we learn
how to handle it and get used to it and perhaps be good so that you will impact in the future what you're passed on to those who follow you. But how can you can't change it, apparently.
Can we say that kusala deeds and akusala deeds are the causes of karma? Because there are two kinds of karma. Kusala karma and akusala karma. Yeah.
Okay.
Whenever there is akusala karma, it has been done. It will bring result or condition result. Because that still is the cause.
The other kind of karma. You said there are two kinds of karma.
Kusala karma has been done already. No one can do anything because it's done.
Yes.
But it will condition the result of that karma later. If we know what are the result of karma.
Yes.
So what are the results of karma now?
Well, as I understand it, the results of karma, depending upon whether it's the karma that has to do with those who preceded your birth.
There is seeing right now.
Pardon me?
There is seeing. Seeing right now.
Seeing. Seeing consciousness, like seeing which sees what is visible. Hearing, seeing.
I'm afraid I can't answer that question. The logic of it appears to be that karma has the hold on you. And
is,
that the best
yeah.
thing you can do is do the best you can under the circumstances.
Is seeing karma?
I'm sorry, I don't understand what the question is.
I think we're using the word with different definitions. And for in the study of Abhidhamma, Gamma means actions.
Okay.
Okay? Gamma is not...
Pardon me.
Gamma, if you look in your dictionary there, you'll see it means cause rather than result. Although, I mean, it's often used to mean result as you are using
it. Yeah. Well, I'm reviewing the book at the moment on Gamma, and they dedicate at least the section which I've been reading to what I've been describing, i.e. the what happens when the person who preceded your birth causes bad things to happen to you after you were born. It seemed to say that there wasn't much you could do other than what you're suggesting, and that is understand what's going on and do the best you can under the circumstances with the present condition brought on by this gamma, and with the hope that in the future you will change things around.
I think what Ajahn was just leading to was, so if we forget about the term gamma for a moment, because some people use it differently, but we talk about cause and result, right? Because when we talk about gamma, we're talking about the law of cause and result. We think of it that way.
Well,
the deed is done. The deed is done in the past, and the result is experienced in the present or the future.
That's correct. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So then, Ajahn was asking about result. What is result of past deeds? If we want to be specific about it, because we have to be precise. Instead of generally talking about cause and result.
Right. Well, it seemed to be
so
Ajahn's
question was...
I mean, the gamma could be, instead of bad things, it could be positive, wonderful things also, right?
Right, but so that's the deed.
That's correct.
The deed may be good or bad. Well, we are performing deeds now, though, so
I'm talking about the deeds that happened before you were born.
But then what's the kind of result when we talk about cause and result in the context of gamma? What do we mean by result exactly?
Well, as I understand it in our current conversation, what I would be looking for is what kind of result can there be when you are impacted by a bad gamma that happened before you were born? And the only thing that I can see with regard to that is to do the best you can under the circumstances.
Yeah. Is result happening now?
The result of previous...
Yes.
What's an example of result happening?
Well, I don't know. You see, it would be some very bad situation, like poverty, let's say, something like that. Extreme poverty, that could be one. And it could be anything, as I understand it, right? I mean, the gamma could either be something wonderful, which means your life is going to be fantastic as a result of the gamma that existed before you were born, or it's going to be difficult in some manner.
But right now we are experiencing different objects through the sense doors. What we see, what we hear, what we feel, what we taste, what we touch. And these can be pleasant or unpleasant.
Yes.
So could this be a result?
Well, I think that if you're talking about, again, the gamma, what the impact of the gamma... I think that that's a different kind of thing. I mean, that is something, as I understand it, that let's use extreme poverty, that you experience as a result of that gamma, and how do you do? You struggle during your life to try to get back where you're making some money, or you learn to live with what you've got.
Okay, I think also we need to make a differentiation between what is reality and what is a concept. And the stories about our lives, being rich and poor, sitting here in the Dhamma discussion, going out and having coffee, being a slave, being this, being that, is all concept. It is not the reality. The realities are only that which, those which arise to either cognize the objects that come through the senses and the mind. There's always dukkha. It's always unsatisfactoriness. Whether you live in a palace or you live in a hovel in the slums in Mumbai, or whatever the circumstances that we think about our lives, is not concept which is created by the mind. It is not the reality.
In the best.
The nature of the things that arise, the dhammas that arise, it's impermanence. So even if you have a life where you have these great results and you have so many good things, life is short. And then with rebirth, you're going to experience the result of other kamas continually and continually and continually. So sometimes it's the result of kusala, sometimes it's the result of akusala, but there's moments are always changing, and we can't cause them to arise, make them last, which is the real essence of it.
So just to summarize and bring it back to the comments before that made some sense to you, when we're more precise, instead of thinking in terms of what someone did in a life before this to us or something like that, in fact, we, instead of thinking in terms of people doing things, there are just good and bad moments of consciousness, good and bad deeds which are performed just like now. So now if there is some understanding, that understanding is good karma which can bring its result in future. If there's a moment of offering a gift to someone, that is good karma. So it's not someone doing something to us, it's just good and bad deeds that have been performed in the past that bring their results now. And the results, we think in terms of results by way of things like having a traffic accident or being starving, but actually, as everyone has just said, the results are actually just moments of seeing pleasant or unpleasant objects, hearing pleasant or unpleasant sounds, what we call poverty, moments of hunger or painful bodily feeling which experiences tangible object just for a moment. So in fact there are good and bad results all the time, even now as we sit here, different experiences. And the third round that I mentioned is the response or the reaction to those results. So there's the seeing of a pleasant object or an unpleasant object, and there, most of the time there is attachment which just accumulates and leads to more bad karma, new karma which will again bring results in future. Or if there's understanding, the understanding can grow and bring its own good results in future. So in fact what we've been saying here is there are no people, no situations, no activities, there are just different mental states, good and bad, and what we call the results are just moments of seeing and hearing.
Yeah, that's a very good explanation. I think I understand.
It's very subtle.
Is this very moment real?
Is this very moment? Is this very moment real? I hope so.
Why hope? No need to hope?
No, yes, it is real, yes.
It's real,
yes,
right?
Of course, yes.
Is the previous moment real?
As far as I know, yes.
Not now.
The previous moment.
It's not real.
Yes.
At this moment.
At
it's
this
gone.
Moment,
it's gone.
It's gone, yes, right.
And the future moment?
We don't know.
But it has to come after this moment, right?
Right, right.
Yeah. So, can we know the truth of this moment? Because it appears as it is, to right understanding.
Can we
understand it, which is real at this very moment?
I think that depends upon the amount of understanding you've developed.
Right, but is it possible?
Yes.
So, I think that instead of thinking, just thinking about the past and the future, what about developing the understanding of this moment,
yeah,
the truth of it?
That's another approach that mm-hmm. makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if we just talk about karma and many, many things without understanding this very moment,
yeah.
it cannot eradicate
yeah.
ignorance and wrong view and wrong idea.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, including karma. So, what is karma now? And what is it exactly? Because seeing is not karma. I think we've been trying to explain. Seeing, for example, is not karma. Hearing is not karma. But thinking, intending to harm someone is karma. That makes sense?
Shall we study one moment at a time because they are different? For example, seeing is not a moment of hearing at all. And if we can understand each moment as it is, we can understand the cause and the result. Which one is the cause and which one is the result? Okay, seeing now, cause or result?
I think that the only way to look at it is the way you just said. I mean, you have to look at every moment and you have to focus your attention on that moment and make up a decision. Make a decision about what it is, whether it's...
Can seeing think about doing good deeds?
I'm sorry, say that again, please.
Can seeing, just seeing itself, think about doing good deeds?
Yes.
Seeing arises to see and it's completely gone. Never come back at all.
It doesn't think about anything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So it's the result.
Yes. If it's gone, it's gone. Right?
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. At this moment of learning about realities and there is understanding about it,
mm-hmm.
is it karma?
I mean, the gamma of the type that I'm mentioning,
is it
the cause?
The cause that can bring results in
yeah.
future.
Yeah, I would think yes.
What kind of gamma? Because you said that there are two kinds, kusala gamma, wholesome.
Well, the one that I'd be optimistic and say that if you have... a right understanding, you can deal with each moment as it comes. So.
Is it possible for this moment of understanding reality will produce the rebirth consciousness?
The reverse consciousness meaning something good?
Rebirth.
Rebirth consciousness. I suppose it's yes.
Because of the right cause will bring its right result.
Because of the impact that the gamma has on your current life.
This moment will be less life for next life.
I think no one knows.
Yeah, because when we think of this life, last life, and next life, we do not understand what life really is.
Right,
but
right.
if we talk about this moment without the previous one, can there be condition for this moment to arise? if there is no reality at all, no citta, no that which can experience an object?
I don't know the answer to that. I guess no.
There is not only one moment of experiencing an object, right?
Yes.
And whenever it arises, it experiences just an object. And it falls away instantly, never come back.
Yes.
But it conditioned the next moment instantly.
Yes.
So there is not just one moment of citta. We call that which yes. is the factory of experiencing citta.
Yes.
So there is not just one moment of citta. So many, but one at a
yes.
time.
Yes.
So at this moment of seeing is not the moment of hearing.
Uh-huh.
Right? Uh-huh. Different conditions. Different time.
Yes, yes. But going back to my initial question about gamma that occurs before
We are going to understand that.
Well, I'm not sure if there is any understanding.
Because we talk about cause and result. Without cause, can there be result?
No.
No. So now we are talking, which is the cause, the moment which is the cause, and the moment which is the result produced by cause which has been done.
I'm sorry, I don't know the...
Is this moment cause, karma?
Yes.
Can it bring produce result later?
Can it reproduce itself? No.
Can it
bring result?
Produce result.
I guess the answer is yes.
Yes, okay. What are the results of this karma?
That's the big question.
Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, which follows the moment of rebirth consciousness. So rebirth consciousness is conditioned by karma. When the karma is unwholesome, it can produce only just the life which is not wholesome, like a animal realm but to be born as human being is the result of good deeds or good karmas.
Yes.
Yes. And at this moment of understanding reality, little by little, can it produce result later?
I don't know.
But one knows that this moment is the result of the previous good deeds. So this present good deeds will condition the next result.
It depending upon the force of the Dharma that existed before you were born.
There are not only one karma, there are so many, many karmas. So it depends on conditions, the right one to condition rebirth consciousness, and
okay.
after that, moment of...
Well, you seem to be saying that it's possible to alter the gamma that's happening before birth by what you're doing.
What produces result?
Moment.
What produces result?
I don't know. I've sort of lost track of this.
Well, can we say that there is result now of previous cause?
Yes.
And there is cause now of future result?
Yes.
So, it's not a question of altering anything, but different causes. Each
yes.
cause
yes.
brings its result.
Yes.
So nothing is altered, but every cause brings its result
yes.
accordingly.
Well, yes, that's true.
Yeah,
yes.
And in due course.
Yes, I understand that.
We can't control when we die, the moment when we die, dying consciousness, that's going to, that karma will produce the rebirth consciousness. So we create karma all throughout our life, moment to moment. And then you die, just depends on what citta arises. Could be a kusala, could be kusala, depending on conditions, and it conditions a birth. So easily could be born just lower realm, higher realm. You know, it's all about the reality and not so much the concept. We could be a good person, we could do many good deeds, but that doesn't mean that the citta is going to be create a good birth in the next lifetime. But that karma continues. It can bring its result at some point. Yes. All the karmas can bring their result at some point.
Up until about how you find, because it's your first discussion, so how are you finding the discussion, Ray, and do you have anything in particular you are interested to hear about?
No, not really. It seems to be over my head because of the vocabulary you all are using, and I don't really know what those words means when you use them. But I do get a basic understanding in the sense as what you're trying to say, what is real, as opposed, and in terms of the concept of self, whether or not you have that self. If you do not have the self attached to the senses, that's detachment or getting unattached to it, and bottom line seems to be like to get to a state where you do not have the self, so you do not have any attachment.
Bottom line, what is real now? What is life at this moment, according to your understanding?
It's what the eye sees, what the ears here or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's
so
what
we
it
could
is,
say just
and
moment.
Without
mm-hmm.
having to interpret it.
Right. So we could say there are just two kinds of realities, those realities which can experience an object like seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, because they can all experience an object. And then there are those realities which cannot experience anything, such as what is seen, the visible object, what is heard, the sound, the smell, taste, touch. So we're used to thinking that there is an I or self that can experience life, but in fact there are just these two kinds of realities, those that can experience an object and those which cannot experience anything.
Right.
And whether we're talking about past lives or the future or any other time, it's actually just like now. Just different kinds of realities. Those that experience an object and those that don't experience anything. And that's
right,
really
that's basically
what it, the message in a nutshell.
Yes, that's basically what I'm getting from the
and
session.
It doesn't matter what words or language,
no.
It's just about those realities.
I agree with what you say, and I think that from my point of view, the bottom line is, so the Gama, or pre-birth Gama, exists, but so what can we do about it? It's gone. Your life is here to be lived the right way. So I think that my apologies for bringing this conversation, because it doesn't really seem to make that much difference. If it's handled properly, and I think you're doing it.
I think it's very useful because whatever question or whatever angle it comes from, actually it always comes back to now and this moment because that's all there is.
Yes.
So now there are results of what has gone before, the moments of seeing and hearing, which see the visible objects and the sounds. So the results of good and bad karma, and there are the causes now of future karma which will bring results in future, but it hasn't come yet. So there are just the moments of result, like seeing and hearing, and then there is the liking, the disliking, or the understanding of what is experienced now. So actually it's quite simple, but it's quite subtle.
I very much sympathize with Paul because it's hard to understand what these guys are saying. The most difficult part is for us, we do not see the world as person, or things. We somehow try to understand the world as realities. And if you do not understand, just grasp the concept of, basic concept of this reality, yeah, you do not understand what this guy is talking about. Yeah. So important thing is, what are these realities, what these guys are talking? It's very important. And I know that you understood karma and vipaka, yeah? And karma, cause and result, and good cause, and good and bad cause, and bad result, and bad, or good result, and bad, good result, and bad result. That's sort of easy part to understand. But it always I who has done bad deeds in the past, which I who is going to receive good deeds in this world or in the future world. As long as we have that idea of self, then you won't understand. It's not clear at all what these guys would say. So the key word is realities. Ajahn, I have a question. Just before they are talking about udit kusam, yeah? Sending sort of merit to those deceased, yeah? Udit kusam?
Ah,
okay. Yeah. How do you translate in English? Udit kusam? Transferring merits to...
Spread.
Yeah, yeah, one's good deeds to sort of for the benefit of...
Transferring
merit. Okay.
What about to let the other know about your good deeds so that they can rejoice?
Yeah. And they are saying that it has to be verbalized. Is it true?
To understand too what is meant by doing good deeds and also let the other person know about it so they can rejoice in the good deeds.
Yeah.
And that moment is kusala.
Yeah. So should it be verbalized?
No rule.
Just giving others the opportunity.
So that is the same question of making it more specific. For instance, those who have the condition, there are conditions for them to do dana by giving, let's say, money to the foundation. The question arises: is it better to give anonymously, or is it better to say, have an anumodana certificate, I come from a tradition, I guess, that where the anonymous giving is considered to be a higher form of giving than that which is advertised and say, for instance, you go here to the temples and you go to these funeral services and you'll see on the backs of the chairs or whatever, people have donated these chairs and different things and they've got the names on it.
And the
amount. And you know, and to me, the first time I ever saw that, I said, oh, how tacky. You know, I mean, that was my reaction was, oh, that's really... that they have to advertise or see, I give. No. And to me, that was that. Whereas, and I always thought that doing it anonymously was a much better thing. But, as John says, there are, not that you need to announce it like over the radio or the TV, but rather that if there are people who are aware that dana has been, that you've performed dana, you are providing an opportunity for conditions for them to have kusala by saying, by feeling joy, I guess that's the word, in your giving as well.
But it depends on one's own jitters when one offers the dana, if one does it quietly or loudly, whether... Yes, one can't say one is better.
But I have a specific reason to ask this question, because now I have a place where I can stay in Ayutthaya. Yeah?
You're
staying
where?
Ayutthaya. Because Ayutthaya, where Kung Alan passed away. Yeah? And whenever I go there, I somehow feel him. Yeah? And so in the morning, I give some alms to monks. Yeah? Now, I'd like to utit kusani. I'd like to transfer merit to him. Yeah? But I cannot verbalize.
Metam.
Oh, my
just temper- thinking.
Ah, yeah, yeah,
or
yeah,
speak
yeah,
in Japanese, anything, not in Pali.
Yeah.
We use the Thai word, not Pali word.
Because I always think of him when I'm there.
So it's the intention.
Yeah, intention, intention. Okay, intention is important than verbalizing.
But
yes.
Otherwise, could he know if you don't say anything at all?
Oh, yeah. It's what I'm afraid of. He may not know. I'm setting him my merits.